fighting for America.
Mr. President, in 2010, you called the results of the midterm election shellacking. What do you call this?
Obviously, Republicans had a good night.
Fighting for Idaho.
The president continues to act on his own. He is going to poison the well. When you play with matches, you take the risk of burning yourself. And he's going to burn himself if he continues to get down this path.
Fighting for you.
Why isn't our government doing something about this? I'll be the first one to say it. President Obama does not care about postpartum Taylor Swift disorder.
I'm pretty sure that's why the Democrats lost the Senate.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Joining us now from the Weekly Standard, author of Clinton Inc., Daniel Harper. Mr. Harper, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So that Weekly Standard, that's a pretty rough crowd y'all hang on. You don't hold anything back in that publication.
Well, why should we? You know, we're an ideological publication where we can sort of speak our minds, and we do.
It's refreshing in America today. Usually everything is so PC, and you can't do this, you can't do that. Speaking of dangerous territory, are you, well, you know, people that write about the Clintons, not a lot of nice things happen to them.
Well, there is a history, I guess, of bad things happening to people who write about the Clintons, but that hasn't really affected me, I would suggest, and I would also suggest that it's usually more about the writers than it is about the Clintons in those cases. Everything's fine, you'll be glad to know. The book, they didn't appear to like it, and there were some efforts, I would argue, to sabotage it along the way, but nonetheless, the book was out, and I believe it's been successful, and I believe welcomed in a lot of different corners, some that I wasn't expecting.
Why choose the title Clinton Inc. When defining two of the most fascinating characters in the last 30 years of American political history?
Well, because I suggest that they have what is in effect a business partnership. That, you know, there's a lot that goes on in a marriage that anyone outside of the marriage can't really understand. But what we can understand is that they act very effectively together as a business organization. And the business is politics, which they do very well, as you said. And the other business is money making, which they've also done very well since leaving the White House. And this book tracks how they left the White House in shambles, how they left the White House in a cloud of scandal and impeachment, and tracks to how they came back, how they are where they are today, which is a really remarkable comeback story.
Well, where do you think the roots of that go? You've had people during impeachment, during everything else, heck, in 92, saying this guy can take a beating but continues on, and I suppose we see that now in his wife. Who fuels the fire, Bill or Hillary?
Well, I think resilience is an important factor in American politics. I think, and I honestly think having a sense of shame also, I would suggest that there's a certain shamelessness to it too. Look, Richard Nixon, maybe he didn't have to necessarily resign. He could have tried to fight back and tried to, you know, be ingratiated. Instead, he lowered his head and he left the American scene after he was disgraced. The Clintons aren't like that. The Clintons constantly want to be in the good graces of the American people. They want to be popular. They want to be well-liked. And they want to achieve more. And that's a unique trait so far in American politics, aimed to have achieved as much as they have.
What did Hillary Clinton learn from the campaign against Barack Obama?
Well, that's a good question. I think if you look back at that campaign, well, when they leave the White House in shambles and they leave the White House in disarray, they have been, you know, Bill has been impeached. What they do is they spend the next few years trying to win over some of their harshest critics, some of the Republicans, so like Newt Gingrich and Congressman Jim Rogan, who helped lead impeachment, to Republicans like Lindsey Graham, where Hillary's in the Senate making good with him. He also helped lead impeachment. But what they didn't realize is that Democrats were angry and upset with the Clintons, that the Clintons had disappointed the Democrats. And so by the 2008 election, the Democrats went with the person they didn't know, Barack Obama, over the person they did know. Democrats felt like Bill Clinton could have been a transformational president. He could have been the, what Ronald Reagan is to the Republican Party. He could have been to the Democratic Party, but he squandered it. The guy gets caught with his pants down in the Oval Office, and he completely threw away his opportunity. Democrats were upset. They said, all right, we'll go with Barack Obama, forget the Clintons. And so I think in the 2008 campaign, Hillary learns that the Democrats don't really like them, and she needs to win them back, and that's why she becomes Secretary of State. That's why she goes into the Obama administration, because she understands that there's a lot of work remaining for her to do.
Now, one person that we don't know a lot about, but you cover in Clinton Inc., is Chelsea Clinton. In fact, you have a titled chapter, Daddy's Little Girl. What? Where does Chelsea figure into all this?
A prominent player in Clinton Inc., and Chelsea has decided that she wants to be an active person, an active participant in her family business. So they have renamed the Clinton Foundation to the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. Chelsea is she's able to control her parents in a way that aides aren't, and she's able to control aides in a way that her parents are. For instance, as one aide described to me, they said something like, if Chelsea Clinton tells you to go out and buy tulips, you don't ask Chelsea Clinton, are these for you or are these for your mom? You go and you do it because, you know, that's how it works. And so it's the same sort of thing in other aspects of the Clinton world. When she says something, people have to listen, and it gives her a massive role in Clinton Inc. And it worries some, because some people don't think that she has the experience necessary to play such a large role in what might be a presidential campaign. And they don't think that they worry that her influence is outsized and perhaps might hurt her mother's ambitions.
Yeah, we take a look at the ambitions. Why do you believe, sir, that Hillary Clinton would want to run again at her age? At her age, she's going to be a grandmother. She's successful, had a great career. Her husband, a great career as well. Why do that at her advanced age?
Well, I think very few people who have had an ambition like that can be so close and not give it a try. You know, she has been in the Oval Office numerous times, obviously, while her husband was president. She met Barack Obama there numerous times. While she was Secretary of State, very few people have come that close to the office and have had as good of a chance of winning as her and not run. So I think ambition is a big defining factor in Hillary Clinton's life. And I think it's really an opportunity to make history, to be the first woman president. I think those things are not lost on her, and I think they are things that excite her and interest her. On the other hand, I would add, they aren't necessarily things that interest her husband. Her husband, I believe, I've been told, is conflicted about whether or not he wants Hillary to win. On the one hand, obviously, he wants the best for his wife. But on the other hand, he's cheated on her before, and he worries that his legacy might be at risk if another Clinton, President Clinton, has a good tenure in the office. His legacy would look tarnished in comparison to him. He would be the Clinton that was impeached, while she presumably wouldn't.
Clinton Inc.'s Daniel Harper with us, online editor of the Weekly Standard at 580 KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning here. You know, looking at some of the reviews of your book, you even go back to Vince Foster, if you will. You know, the old days of the American Spectator and all that, and having covered those stories like we all did back in the day. Any new evidence there?
No, I suggest in the book that there are other rumors and unsubstantiated things that will have to be dealt with by Hillary Clinton eventually, but maybe not. I mean, people were always suspicious of her closeness, I understand, to Vince Foster, that they were extremely close. But, you know, I don't know whether, on the one hand, it is ancient history. On the other hand, there are still people curious about all these things. Same with sort of the Whitewater scandal, same with the cattle futures. There are these sort of scandals that have been sitting here on the surface for years. They've never really been resolved. And on the one hand, there isn't really much to dig them up by a large number of people. But on the other hand, there is still curiosity as to what actually happened and what these relationships were really like. And I don't know whether these will have to be come out in the next presidential campaign, but it's a possibility that they will, because there are people who are interested.
Well, one person who is coming out, and that's Monica Lewinsky. In Clinton Inc., how did you cover Monica, and does she play a prominent role in what's going to happen with Hillary?
Well, that's interesting. She just joined Twitter yesterday, and she's gave a public speech for the first time in a while yesterday. Monica Lewinsky is a very interesting character. She was maligned largely by her lover, by President Clinton and his people. They set out to make her look like a stalker and like a wild, you know, lustful woman, as opposed to it being a consensual mutual relationship, which it most likely was. And to be embarrassed and humiliated on a national stage like that, you have to applaud her for coming out and being courageous enough finally to sort of, you know, take the public role that she has. I don't know whether it hurts them or not. I suspect it doesn't. It's just been so long that, you know, the funny thing about the Monica Lewinsky scandal, as far as Hillary goes, is that it really helped her. It really helped her career. It gave her a lot of freedom that she wouldn't have had otherwise. And she was able to say, okay, well, you know, you go deal with this. I'm moving to New York, and I'm going to run for Senate in New York, which she did successfully. So it's a very weird relationship with Monica Lewinsky the Clintons have, obviously. But in all this, you obviously have to feel for Monica as well.
Well, speaking of Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, there have been reports all the time about Bill Clinton's, you know, affairs or, you know, alleged affairs. You know, in your end notes, you cite his Cheat and Hard article from the American Spectator from the old days. You've been covering this. I mean, what do we know in the TMZ world we live in? Does it matter?
I think it does matter. I think we know that it's ongoing, that this is who Bill Clinton is. His reckless behavior is not, you know, he's not able to remove himself from it, that's just a defining factor of who he is. And I think it does matter. I think it reminds people that these people, the Clintons, with them comes a lot of scandal, and it's not as smooth as people seem to remember 20 years later. Clinton White House is very chaotic. Even as they're running for president, you know, you think of Jennifer Flowers coming out and claiming she had an affair with Bill Clinton. It's just very chaotic in a way that it's not remembered. And I think every time there's another eruption, it does remind people that these people invite scandal every step.
Your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
We continue on at 580 KIDO. Clinton Inc.'s Daniel Harper with us. You know, you write about the former president and the former first lady, former secretary of state, former senator from New York, making friends with political opponents. How do they do that, considering the people that fought so hard to get rid of them, Newt Gingrich, the impeachers, heck, even Chris Ruddy?
Well, I think a lot of the people actually turned out to be, in their own right, flawed. I mean, Newt Gingrich had, of course, his own fidelity problems. He had his own marital problems. And a lot of the people who fought the Clintons sort of were lucky in who fought them. But also, the Clintons realized on a very human level that if you reach out to people and you're nice to people, that they'll probably be nice back. And so the Clintons just started being nice to people. They started reaching out to people. You know, Jim Rogan, the former congressman from California, one of the impeachment leaders, he has exchanged personal letters with Bill Clinton. Newt Gingrich told me that he gets phone calls every once in a while from Bill Clinton where they just talk about politics and stuff. And so they've just reached out and just said, you know, tried to be nice to the people who hated them most. And I think that's really paid off. I think if the people who hated them most no longer hate them as much, I think everybody else has a hard time hating them as much either. And so it softened their image over the course of many years and many photo ops and many of these personal touches. And it's taken a decade and a half, but I think Republicans now generally look at the Clintons a lot more favorably than they used to for this reason.
Well, and compared to what they have now, what's the relationship between the Clintons and Barack Obama?
The relationship between the Clintons and Barack Obama is, I think it's a mutual benefit. They understand there's mutual benefit to being close. They're not friends per se, but they realize that each one can help the other person. Barack Obama is a sitting United States president. Hillary, of course, had problems with the Democratic Party and lost to Obama. So she doesn't want a repeat of 2008 if she runs again in 2016. She understands that she needs to keep him a little bit close and be a little bit kind to him. And likewise, it's in Obama's best interest to have a Democratic successor because he has taken to ruling with the pen and the phone, as he says. He has taken to being a very strong executive, and a lot of those actions could be overdone if a Republican becomes the next president of the United States. That's why he needs a Democratic successor. He needs Hillary Clinton. Hillary needs Obama. They understand that they both need each other.
Have they come to grips with how they were beat in 08? It seemed like the Obamas out-Clinton the Clintons.
Yeah, look, I don't think they'll ever forgive the Clintons. I don't think the Clintons will ever forgive Obama for beating him. I mean, there's always going to be that sort of grudge. But I think President Clinton has been, in a way, he's not as upset, I understand, because he doesn't see Obama as a very good president, and he doesn't see, and he sees that Obama lacks a lot of his gifts. Bill Clinton can talk to Republicans, can actually have conversations, can deal with them in a way. He was able to get things like welfare reform done and other important factors. You know, Obama hasn't been able to get bipartisan legislation done in not close to the same way.
When we take a look at Bill Clinton and David Schuster, Hillary Clinton and David Schuster, a lot of people don't know who David Schuster is. I used to do some stuff with him all the time. At one time, an up-and-coming reporter, a commentator, a guy that had his own show, and then he crossed the Clintons, and who knows where David Schuster is now?
Yeah, well, David Schuster, he was on MSNBC. He's a liberal guy. He's a nice guy. He's a, you know, sort of a conventional liberal. He asked a question whether or not he thought that the Clintons were, quote, pimping out Chelsea Clinton, and for that they waged war on him in 2008. Schuster's side maintained that the war was waged for political gain and because they wanted to essentially kickstart this war on women and have this narrative that Hillary's being discriminated against because she's a woman. Either way, he was on the losing end, and he got suspended for a couple weeks, and he believes that it really hurt his reputation at the network. He no longer works at NBC. He works at Al Jazeera, actually, where he's been a correspondent, I guess, for the last year or two. And at NBC, you know, it wasn't just that they waged war at him. They, and owned by NBC, of course, which is owned by Comcast, which is owned by GE. And what the Clintons did is they called board members of the corporate board of GE, who called the CEO, and the CEO turned around and called the MSNBC head and said, why is your reporter calling Chelsea Clinton a prostitute on air? And that's how they sort of went above everybody's head to punish David Schuster. I tell that story in detail in my book. It's a little more smooth the way I've written it than how I retold it this morning.
Yeah, a proud graduate of the University of Michigan, that Schuster. He, again, as you said, a conventional liberal, but he crossed swords with the Clintons, much to his chagrin. Where do we go from here? You know, people in Idaho, we've got a governor running for a third term. They call it otter fatigue. Could Clinton fatigue be a factor in this?
It could be. It could very well be, especially if Jeb Bush runs, right? Do we want another Bush-Clinton race? Do we want another, you know, it's just, aren't there other families that can govern us? A lot of Americans might be asking. And there might be that sort of fatigue that could hurt her. But she's running as a different kind of candidate. She's going to run as a elder stateswoman type candidate. Whether that works or not, we don't know. Clinton has never won that way. Bill Clinton, of course, when he ran, he was a young, attractive, outside the beltway, Southern Democrat, Democratic governor. So it's very different even for the Clintons how they're running, and it's not clear that she's going to win. It's not a foregone conclusion. Remember, she was inevitable in 2008 and she lost. She's inevitable now and she could still lose. So these titles and things, they don't really mean that much. We'll have to see how she can adjust the campaign trail, because in the past it's been a lackluster for her.
Final thought, Clinton Inc. and Bush Inc., how linked are they?
They're linked. They have both made peace with each other. They understand that there's benefit to being liked by the other side, and that it can help their reputation to be nice on a personal level to the other side, because it makes them and look good publicly. I think it's helped George H.W. Bush's reputation. It's helped Bill Clinton's reputation, and now it's helping George W. Bush's reputation as well. These are not, I don't want to make it sound like these are only cynical people. There's probably a certain amount of friendship in these relationships, but these are political calculators of the highest degree. They wouldn't have gotten to where they are today without that. And they are very, very good at what they do. And a lot of what they do, there's intention behind it.
Now, it's just amazing that, Poppy Bush in the day after Bill Clinton decimated him, that they would talk. It just seems like an unusual alliance that, again, has gone on to George W. Just fascinating their relationships. They speak fondly of the Clintons, and yet that doesn't stop the Clintons from sometimes smacking the Bushes.
No, it certainly doesn't. I have a whole chapter in this. It's not. I wouldn't say all family members of the Bush family are on board. There are a couple who think that it's kind of nuts and aren't that big a fan of the Clintons. But I think the rest of them sort of realize that there is benefit to having good photo ops and to having good optics and to being liked by the other side. And I think that's where this relationship. That's how it works.
Well,
I do have a whole chapter on the relationship in my book.
Well, Mr. Harper, we'd love to have you back, and we appreciate your time. Good luck to you and Clinton Inc. and to the Weekly Standard. Thank you for your hard work.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. As we've been talking about all morning long, two Army Guard pilots have died in a crash south of Gowan Field. With the very latest is Channel 7's Bonnie Shelton. Bonnie, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. Yeah, we are out here where that crash happened. It's about 2 miles south of Gowan Field and the Boise Airport. Just a field. There's only one house in the area. And there are some crews here, but they're really just guarding the crash site this morning, waiting until daybreak when investigators can get here and try to piece together what led up to this crash. But here's what we know at this hour. The Apache helicopter crashed with two people on board last night around 7 o'clock. A spokesperson for the Idaho National Guard says the Apache went down during a training mission. That's all we know about that right now. The Ada County coroner did confirm with us the two people who died in the crash are men, but they're not releasing their names at this time. They're waiting to talk with family members. The Apache helicopter crashed on private property here. It's in a field, and as I said, there's only one house in the area. And as you can imagine, it's been a very long night for everyone at the Idaho National Guard, people we've talked with in the local military community. There's a lot of sadness and shock. A spokesperson talked with us briefly after the crash last night. That's Colonel Tim Marsano. And he told us the Guard's thoughts and prayers are with the families of the soldiers who were killed. He also said that the crash will be thoroughly investigated. And as I said, that's really going to start this morning once the sun comes up. We have seen some more cars coming through this area that they have blocked off this morning, getting ready to start that process this morning. And I also wanted to mention we talked with the Ada County coroner, and the autopsies will be performed on the bodies of those two soldiers who were killed later this morning. So we're going to be hoping to get some more information later today on what happened here.
Bonnie Shelton joining us from Channel 7, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Bonnie, of course, probably too soon to tell if it you know what type of training exercise, but it certainly underscores that how these folks put their lives in danger each and every day, whether it's at war or training.
It's very true, and we've been talking with a major general from the Idaho National Guard and some other different representatives from there, and that's one thing that they definitely reiterated is these two soldiers, they were practicing a training mission, something to try and protect our country, and this accident happened. They're not really sure what led up to it. They have reiterated that to us this morning. I just talked with Colonel Tim Marsano again minutes ago from the Idaho National Guard, and he said there's no new information to release at this time because they're really just trying to sort through what happened and figure out how this crash happened last night around 7 o'clock.
And Bonnie, also a challenge for you talking to these folks that have known these people that have dedicated their lives to saving America, protecting America, and yet now they have to inform the public. I'm sure it's very emotional for those folks, as you've described earlier.
Very emotional, and it's tough, and you feel for them because these are their brothers. That's what they called them. They have trained with them, and that's what they were doing. They were trying to prepare to defend our country, and this happened, and they're really trying to figure out what caused it, if there was a problem. They're not sure why that helicopter went down, and so that's why they're going to be doing a thorough investigation, and that will continue this morning once the sun comes up, and they've really been keeping a close eye on this crash site here about 2 miles south of Gowan Field.
And Bonnie, again, reiterating what has happened overnight and what do you expect to happen today?
Last night around 7 o'clock, an Apache helicopter on a routine training mission with two men inside went down at about 7 o'clock just south of Gowan Field. And this morning we're waiting to hear who those men were, if we can get their identities. Those haven't been released to us. Find out what their history was with the Idaho National Guard. We know they're soldiers. And really just waiting to see what the investigation reveals. There's going to be people out here throughout the day combing through the wreckage, trying to figure out what caused this crash. And so we'll be following up on that and trying to get the latest.
Bonnie Shelton, Channel 7. Thank you, ma'am. There we have it. Bonnie Shelton from Channel 7 here at 580 KIDO. And as we've talked about, we have these pilots that have given their lives to keep us safe. And many folks, just like a lot of us, we, you know, haven't been in the military, or if we have, you know, we assume that training, just like going to work, sometimes things happen. And let's face it, at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, when we take a look at this helicopter crash, and as Bonnie said, this happened last night, you have these folks conducting a training exercise that, let's face it, real-world situations, real-world activities that play out in Kandahar, that play out in Iraq, that play out in other places. And now we've lost two pilots. I don't really have to tell you about the loss, do I? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And, you know, these things happen in routine trainings, and those that have been in the military understand, you know, it's not normal, and we make it seem normal with their brilliance. It's not normal to sit back and, you know, do these crazy, wonderful things that these military people do, right? Think about that. Let's hear more from Colonel Marsano.
Runway 10 right, to the next way, clear for the officer.
That's correct. I'm just trying to keep you out of the way. There's a helicopter searching for another helicopter to the south.
78 Tower, are you going to hold the spotlight, or are you going to be landing?
78 won't be landing. We will be overhead with light.
And there we have it. Sounds from the scene. Here is Colonel Tim Marsano.
It's a very difficult evening for us in the Idaho National Guard. At approximately 7 p.m. this evening, an Idaho Army National Guard Apache helicopter with two crew members aboard crashed while on a training mission. We don't know the reasons why. We can't speculate at this point. I can tell you that a thorough investigation will be happening starting right now, and we'll keep you posted and apprised as to the results of that investigation.
There we have it. What goes on in the investigation? As we said, we cannot emphasize again and again and again our thoughts and prayers going out to the families of these two brave pilots that have lost their lives here. And again, if you work around Gowan Field, if you're a member of the Guard, I'm sure you have been in touch. You'll be hearing about this throughout the day as we move along. So we have that major story going on. Other issues that we will talk about. But before that, you know, unlike, you know, look, this is a club, I call it, at 580KIDO. We're very blessed to have time to talk. It's very similar to getting up, going to your favorite place, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a social gathering, whether it's a place you work out at, whether it's a church, and you see the regulars, you see the usuals. But in this case, everybody's the usual. And unlike other folks that are working very diligently in the local media today, you know, they're going to go on to other stories because it's a circular thing when you do news. We will stay with this, and we will ask you, and you're thinking, Kevin, it's 546. Well, if you're security guard Mike, security guard John that I heard from yesterday on Facebook, Nolan, Joe, and others, you think to yourself, my goodness gracious, I thought we weren't at war. I thought these things didn't happen. This is the brilliance of the United States military. The brilliance of the military that they make the extraordinary normal. The Hercules transports, the Apache helicopters, the best aircraft in the world. They make those things seem as easy as getting on in a taxi cab. And they do it day in and day out. And it underscores the danger that those folks face each and every day when, in fact, they are on missions. We don't know the details. You know, I can recall many times and how many of us, you know, put our trust in something. And whether it's politics or politicians, we say to ourselves, well, I'm cynical, but when it comes to the military, this shows you how noble a cause it is. This shows you what these folks go through and what dangers they face. And so when people talk about cutting the military, when people start saying, you know something, we're paying too much for benefits, how can anyone, as a God-fearing, freedom-loving American, ever shortchange the military? Chances are, my friends, that we're not going to perish by going to work. Okay, I could get a paper cut. That would be a bad thing, okay? Don't face a lot of danger here. And from our many adventures with the military, when we traveled overseas, their professionalism, and we're talking about the Idaho Air and Army National Guard, folks that are your neighbors, folks that could be doing other things, but they truly live what Mel Gibson personified in that movie, The Patriot, and a commitment to an ideal. When I always wonder what's going to happen to us, when I always wonder what's going to happen to America, the future, I look back and I say, well, we have the military. And as long as we have the military, we're good to go. So again, if you're just waking up, as you heard from Channel 7's Bonnie Shelton right here at 580KIDO, we have had a loss of life happen last night around 7 o'clock of an Apache helicopter undergoing a training exercise where, in fact, they do these incredible things all the time, and we've lost two men. It crashed. Now, you've got folks at Gowan Field right now. You've got people probably from the NTSB coming out. You've got the Ada County Coroner out there. It just goes to show you just how incredible these folks are. So that is one thing that we will be talking about today, and how interesting that this is happening right before Veterans Day. And we'll be at the Idaho State Veterans Home again and again and again. And we will be doing this throughout the day, throughout the morning. talking about this, but we will be honoring those folks that made it back.
The Apache, a Longbow helicopter with two souls aboard, was flying a routine training mission when it went down. Conditions out here, excellent for flying. Lots of crews, lots of ambulance, lots of fire crews and police officials out here on the scene. We have not been told anything about the crew on board this Apache Longbow. It is a vehicle that carries two pilots, one in front of the other, in that kind of formation. It's a very large helicopter, 16 of them at Gowan Field.
There you have it from Fox News Radio there. 16 Apache Longbows. Let's hear from Colonel Tim Marsano. Again, if you're just waking up at 580 KIDO, an Apache has crashed, killing two folks at Gowan Field, killing the pilot and the navigator.
An Idaho Army National Guard Apache helicopter with two crew members aboard crashed while on a training mission. We don't know the reasons why. We can't speculate at this point.
Yes. Speculation is out the window this morning. We will turn it over to you coming up concerning our salute to these brave men that have paid the ultimate price. 580-5436. 580-KIDO. Let's get you to traffic now. At 5
on deck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Runway 10 right, 2-3-6, this is the option.
Correct. I'm just trying to keep you out of the way. There's a helicopter searching for another helicopter to the south.
78 Tower, are you going to hold the spotlight or are you going to be landing?
78 won't be landing. We will be overhead with light.
Good morning, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. I wish that we had better news, but if you have been watching this story all last night, a helicopter crash at Gowan Field, this is what we know.
An Idaho Army National Guard Apache helicopter with two crew members aboard crashed while on a training mission. We don't know the reasons why. We can't speculate at this point.
We can't speculate at this point here, but we are talking about this and just talking about the courage it takes, the attention to detail it takes to be in the military. Now, we don't appreciate it, and unfortunately, we don't talk about them enough until we have a tragedy like this that has occurred. We will have the very latest on this, and we will get your thoughts on the cost of freedom that unfortunately we're hearing about and speaking about this morning. At 580-KIDO. Phone number's 580-5436. 580-KIDO. We will also take a look at a few other things. But again, we will primarily focus in on what happened, well, last night about 7 o'clock, where you have Idaho Army National Guard pilots aboard Apache Longbow, one of the most advanced fighting aircraft around, crashing. The Ada County Coroner will be on the scene as well. Let's get you to traffic at 5:59. Kevin Miller in the morning, repeating our top story. Two Idaho Army Air National Guard pilots dead at Gowan Field. Helicopter crash. We'll have the very latest on that, plus your comments on, well, just safety and what goes into keeping America safe. You're listening to 580-KIDO. Good morning.
Serving